There are 39 milahot, which constitute forms of work forbidden on the Sabbath. It's the why behind the way we do the things we do. Join Rabbi Moshe Schnurb now for Hilchos Shabbos, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is Soul to Soul on your radio. Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Matas, Masay, Erev Rosh Chodesh, Kodesh Menachem Av, and a warm welcome to all of our radio family. Thank you so much for taking the time on a very busy Friday to join us and learn together with us some of the important concepts and yesodis of this week's Parsha, leading into Tisha B'Av, leading into our real pain that we have for the fact that we don't have Eretz Yisrael, that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, that we don't have a connection to our Kodesh Baruch Hu. And we'll mention that as we go through today's shir. As always, today's shir is brought to you as a Refuah Shlema for Cholim who are on the list, and obviously all of Klal Yisrael, which that list includes Lana Tevye Bas Levina, plus Akava Bas Libamina, Binyamina Bas Yenta, Basya Bas Ayala, Yerachmiel Ben Etta, Zalman Yitzchak Ben Fege Rivka, Shimon Leib Ben Ahuva Batsheva, Zev Yankiv Ben Liora, B'seich Shor Choyle Yisrael, amongst all of those amongst Klal Yisrael who need Refuah, who need Yeshua, who need HaKadosh Baruch Hu's great caress, who need HaKadosh Baruch Hu's a kiss from Him, Be'ez Hashem, we should all be zeicher to receive that ultimate and beautiful kiss. One of the main subjects in this huge Pasha, or double Pasha, that we have this Shabbos, the Matas and Maaseh, the two final Sedras of Sefer Ba'Midbar, is of course the discussion between HaKadosh Baruch Hu, between Moshe Rabbeinu and the tribes of Reuven and Gad, who wanted to get a inheritance, who wanted their piece of land instead of inheriting in the land of Israel with the rest of the Jewish nation. They wanted their little corner of eternity to be on the east bank of the Jordan River, the land that the Jewish nation had captured from the Midianite kings, from Sichon and Og. In fact, the Torah says, "Umikne Rav, hoyo levne Reuven velevne Gad." These two tribes, the tribes of Reuven and the tribes of Gad, had a huge amount of cattle. Otzamoy, amazing amounts. Vayiru, and they saw us, Eretz Yazer, Eretz Gilad, the land of Yazer, the land of Gilad, v'nea makom makom mikne. This was a perfect place for them. It was fertile, there was lots of grass. It would be absolutely sublime for them and their flocks to be able to live here. And we need, of course, to understand what was it that Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven were claiming, that they specifically wanted, that because they had so much cattle, that was the reason they wanted not to go into the land of Israel. The land of Sichon and Og was a land, but was that a really sufficient reason for them to pass up the opportunity to be part of what was going on and being part of the Jewish nation and going into Eretz Yisrael? So the reality is that we find in a Mishnah in Masechet Baba Kama that you're not allowed to actually raise certain kinds of animals, sort of goats and sheep, in the land of Israel, because they actually damage fields of the neighbors. And the Gemara, in fact, says over there that there was an absolute necessity to actually include in that decree even larger animals, like oxen and cows also, that it should be really forbidden to raise them also in the land of Israel for the same reason. But this was a decree, as the Gemara says, she'ein Rov Hatzibo Yochol Lamabo, that most of the people would not be able to have withstood that test, and therefore the rabbis didn't actually make that decree. But it requires some elucidation as to what was going on. So please, God, we're going to try a little bit to understand what this is all about and the impression it has for us. But we're going to do it just after the break. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. We're just getting started.
There are 39 milahot which constitute forms of work forbidden on the Sabbath. It's the why behind the way we do the things we do. Join Rabbi Moshe Schnurb now for Hilchos Shabbos, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is Soul to Soul, back on your radio. Erev Shabbos Kiddush, Parshas Matas Masei, Erev Rosh Chodesh Menachem Av. So we are talking about the claim of the sons of Reuven and Gad, the tribe, to inherit land on the east bank of the Jordan River instead of in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara says, it tells a story about a certain chosid, a certain very righteous person, who was malish, who was not well, he was sort of sighing all the time. And they asked the doctors, what should they do? And the doctor said, there's no way he can be remedied until he's actually going to suckle some boiling milk every single morning from the animal. So they brought him a goat, and they tied it to the legs of his bed, and he used to actually suckle from it every single morning. His friends came to visit him, and they saw this goat tied to a foot of his bed. Even though this was Israel, you're not supposed to have these kind of animals. So they turned around and went back, and they said, what are you talking about? We can't go in here. This guy's like an armed robber. He's violating a Torah principle by having this animal in his house. And they left. And they went and checked, and they found that this was the only sin that this person ever committed. And he himself, at the time when he died, said, I know that I have committed no other sin except the sin of having that goat in my house, where I went against the words of my colleagues. In fact, the truth is, the law is, nowadays, the Shulchan Aruch actually brings down in Choshe Mishpat, Simon 409 Tafdet, that we don't actually raise these kind of animals in Eretz Yisrael because of the fact that they go and graze in other people's fields and cause damage very, very likely. And the Gemara finishes, but the Halach says, but nowadays says that Jews don't, unfortunately, that there aren't too many Jews in the land of Israel and they don't have fields, it would seem that nowadays it would be mutter. So if so, nowadays, that with the kindness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we actually merited to once again come back and settle in Eretz Yisrael. So it would seem that the decree of Chazal would sort of come back into its place, that it would be also to actually raise these kind of animals in Eretz Yisrael. And in fact, Rav Yosef, in his Sefer Yabia Oimer, actually says like that. However, the opinion of the Rami Pano in his responsa is that the prohibition to grow these kind of animals, sheep and goats, in the land of Israel is only where you just let them go free range and go wherever they want. But if you provide them with food and whatever they need in a protected place, then the rabbis did not decree against that. And Eliezer Waldenberg in Tzitz Eliezer says that we can rely on this opinion of the Rami Pano when there's But what he calls b'shas hadachach, when there's no other permissibility. That's when one needs to grow these kind of animals, as long as you can look after them and make sure they don't go anywhere, and that's a ruling both on a general basis and for each personal individual. Now, this then was the claim of the B'nai Gad and the B'nai Ruvain, that they did not want to come into Eretz Yisrael with their large amount of cattle. And therefore, they actually pointed that out to Moshe Rabbeinu, and they mentioned the fact that their main motivation for staying behind was the cattle. They mentioned that actually at the very, very beginning of the argument, because that was their main reason why they didn't want to go into the land of Israel, and they preferred to stay, in fact, on the east bank. So if so, we need to understand, why did Moshe Rabbeinu get so angry at them, right? Until the point where he actually compared them to the spies, to the Meraglim. Similarly, we find in the Medrash that talks very negatively about these tribes of God and Reuven. He says, you find sometimes that by these tribes, B'nai God and B'nai Reuven, that they were very, very wealthy, and they had a tremendous amount of cattle, and they preferred, they had a greater love for their own property, for their own fortune, and they went and sat outside of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore they were the first tribes that were sent into exile from all the other shvatim. As it says, the pasuk in Divrei Hayamim says, "Vayigalem laRuveini v'laGadi." They sent into exile the Reuven and Gad and half of the tribe of Menashe. And what caused that, says the Medrash? Because they separated themselves from their brethren because of their own wealth, because of their own fortunes. Right? How do we know? Because it says in the Torah, "Umikne Rav Hayov Neirum." The whole parsha is introduced by telling us how wealthy they were, and that is a very strong criticism against them. And again, the question is, right, what was wrong with their request, if in fact it was motivated by this desire not to bring animals into the land of Israel? So let's try to answer as follows. The Gemara says that regarding the animals that belong to great tzaddikim, so even those animals, the tzaddik is an exalted special person, their animals also are not run-of-the-mill animals. In fact, Chazal say, in Avos Rav Nosson, in the 8th parak, says, just like the first tzaddikim were Hasidim, so too their animals were also righteous. Right? It says that the camels of Avram Avinu would not go into a house that had some kind of symbol of idol worship in it. As it says, they come to they when he comes to Lavan, says, "V'anochi pinisi habayis, I cleaned out my house, I took away all the idols, umakom l'gmalim, and therefore the camels can come in." What does it mean? "Anochi pinisi habayis, I cleaned up the house from all my idols," right? And therefore, so what does it mean that there's place for the camels? It teaches that the camels would not have gone into the house of Lavan, right, until he got rid of all of the Avodah Zarah, all of the idol worship there, right? And that, it says, it once happened with the donkey of Rabbi Chanina ben Daisa, right, that robbers stole him, and they sort of locked up this donkey in a certain courtyard, and they tried to give him some straw and some barley and some water, and he wouldn't eat them. He wouldn't eat and he wouldn't drink. So they said, why are we giving him a food? Well, we can't let him just die, and then he's gonna stink up the whole courtyard. So they opened the door for him, and they let him go out, and he was pulled him along until he got back to Rav Chanina. They went all the way back home. And as soon as he got to him, so Avnilu ben Dosa's son heard the voice of the animal, and he says, Daddy, I hear the voice that's similar to our animal. He says, my son, open the door, because you know I thought you would already be dead from hunger. So he went and he opened the door, and they gave her some straw, and they gave her some barley, and they gave her some water, and she was eating and drinking. And therefore, they said, just like the tzaddikim were great, great people, so too their animals were righteous, just like they were. There are many other stories that we'll touch on after the break about Rav Chanina ben Dosa and other great tzaddikim, and their great care, and their great honesty, and their great integrity in caring for animals, and how the animals sort of responded to that. But let's do that right after the break. This is 101.9 Chai FM.
There are 39 milahot, which constitute forms of work forbidden on the Sabbath. It's the why behind the way we do the things we do. Join Rabbi Moshe Schnurb now for Hilchos Shabbos, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is Soul Dizzle, back on your radio. Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Matos, Masei, Tov Shin Pei, Erev Rosh Chodesh, Menachem Av, Tov Shin Pei. Hey, as we prepare for another amazing, amazing Shabbos, we are talking about the great righteousness of Tzaddikim as regards their animals. That Gemara talks in Tainus about Rav Chanina ben Dosa, who someone left on his doorstep some chickens, and this is the house where he sat, and he learnt, and he davened, and he took the chickens and didn't know who the owner was, and he looked after them and raised them, and they had eggs, and they had more chickens, and it grew and grew and grew until there were so many chickens he couldn't even keep them in the house anymore. So he went and sold them and bought goats. And then the neighbors come in and said, what's going on? These goats are going into our property. They're eating our produce. And he got alarmed, and he bought little bears, and he put them on the heads of the animals. And finally, this person came back and said, I think I left my chickens here. Do you know where they are? He says, come to the courtyard. And he showed him this huge flock of goats. And gave it back, and gave it back to the owner, and took it. Gemara says further, in Tainus on Daf Chav Dalet, that in the property of Rav Yossi, right, there was a donkey that he used to rent it out to other people. To do work, you know, and at the end of the day, those who rented it would leave the wages that they owed Rabbi Yossi on the donkey, and they'd send him home, but the donkey would not move from his place if the money that was placed on his back was too much. More than money he actually agreed upon. Gemara says that one day the renters put an amount of money, the exact number of money, on the back of the chamor, but still the donkey still refused and didn't move. So the renters tried to understand what was going on. Why did the donkey refuse? Until they understood that one of them forgot his shoe and left that also on the back of the chamar. And the donkey could feel that he was carrying on his back something that didn't belong to his owner. And with his own instinct that he had, he knew that he couldn't move on. Moran Chulin on Daf Zayin tells about Pinchas ben Yoyer that he was once on his way to get busy in the mitzvah of redeeming prisoners, and he came to a certain hotel, and there they brought some barley for his donkey, and the donkey refused to eat it. So they sort of sifted the barley, and again he still refused to eat it. So they removed all the dirt right from the barley, and the donkey remained adamant he was not going to eat it. So Pinchas Ben Yair said to him, "Maybe you didn't properly take tithes of the barley." So they went and they tithed the barley, and then the donkey went and ate them. Said to him, Pinchas Ben Yair, "See, this animal is on its way to do the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you're trying to feed it food that's tevel, food that hasn't properly been tithed." So too in the Medrash, in Bereshit Shabbah, and in the Yerushalmi, it talks about a story again about Pinchas Ben Yair's donkey. That again, it was once taken by robbers, and for 3 days it refused to eat until they realized that they couldn't keep it, and they sent it away, and it went back to its master, and it wouldn't eat any of the food that they served, that the servants served. So Pinchas asked, "Why have you sort of served him by mistake something that again was the mai that might not have been tied?" So they said, "No, because the halach is that food you give an animal doesn't have to. Even if it would be this demai, this questionable food, you're allowed to feed it to him." So he said to him, "Oh, yeah. Right? What can I do? This animal is machmir, will only eat food that is properly tithed." Right? And the psikta says, there was a story about a certain Jew that he had one cow. And that cow used to plow, and his financial situation went down, and he had to sell it to a certain non-Jew. So as soon as the non-Jew took it and used it to plow, right? So she used it 6 days of the week, right? And on Shabbos, he took the animal out that she should plow. And she just crouched down and said, "No, I'm not going." And he hit her, and it didn't make difference. She would not move from her place. So once he saw this, he went back and said to the Jew who sold it to him, it's a dud animal. Right? Go take your animal back, give back my money." He refuses to work. So that Jew understood that it was because it was Shabbos, because it already learned in it was used to in his house that it never worked on Shabbos. So he says to him, "Come, I'll get it to work." So when the donkey came, he whispered in the ear of the donkey, he says, "You know that when you were in my property, so then you would only work during the week and not on Shabbos. And on Shabbos you used to rest. But now that, because unfortunately our sins have caused us to be financially not able, and now you belong to this non-Jew, so I'm asking for you, right? Go get up and thresh." But the non-Jew still persisted and said, "No, please take your animal back. I'm going to have to go look for you every Saturday to try to get the animal to work. And besides, I need to know what incantations did you whisper into her ear, so I can do it also." So the Jew said to him, he comforted him, said, "Don't worry. There's no witchcraft involved. There was no sleight of hand. But this is what I told her. I said that now you don't belong to me. Now you must listen to your new master." And she got up and did her. Did a job. So now the non-Jew was afraid, and he said, "And what if this cow that doesn't have the ability to speak and doesn't really have intelligence, she understood her creator and wouldn't work on Shabbos, and I was created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his own in his own image, and he gave me intelligence. And how can I not recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Straight away he came and he converted and he learned Torah, and he was merited to learn, understand Torah. And they used to call him Yochanan ben Turasa. And until now, our rabbi said, the rabbis used to actually say over laws in his name, right? And if you are amazed that because of a cow, this person decided to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't be so amazed, because as we learned in the Torah portion 2 weeks ago, it is in fact a cow that has the ability to purify all of the Jewish nation, but as we discussed, with the Parah Aduma, the red heifer. So it comes out that the main reason that these animals were kind of merited this great level of righteousness is because of the tzaddikim that they belong to, because a tzaddik has a tremendous influence on his entire environment, including his animals. As in fact, the Shev Shmaitzer writes in his foreword, in his introduction to his sefer, he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave over to a person on the day that he created him all the energies, all the koyches of all the other things that were created before him, and those that are down here, and those that are in heaven, and those are the highest of the angels, all of them were given over, the power of control of all of them was given over into the hands of anyone who is a tzaddik and wants nothing more than the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if a tzaddik reaches a certain level, then all those other things, big and small, are able to rise in their level also. And if God forbid a man lives a corrupt life, then he corrupts everything else in the entire creation. It's a scary thought. We find by the generation of the flood that when men were acting immorally and terribly, so that the entire energy of the entire world descended, and they also became, even the animals, kihishkis kol basar dachalarts, the whole world became corrupt because human beings were corrupt. Even the animals, as Chazal say, that even some of the angels fell down to earth and were running around looking to get involved in relationships with women, because it affected the way we act, affects everything else in the entire world. And that's what the Beis Halevi brings down, and he brings also in his explanation on the Chumash, and he proves it from the generation of the Mabul, that the whole world became corrupt because of human beings and became the new nature of other world. And he brings over there that the same thing would work positively, that if we have a positive influence on the world, it's going to upgrade everything in the entire universe because of us. So let's get back to the B'nai Gad and the B'nai Reuven, right? Until the time of the second temple, of the second Beis HaMikdash, they never made this decree that you're not allowed to raise animals in Eretz Yisrael. Because of the greatness of the holiness of the people. So, of course, they had this incredible influence on the animals that they would never, ever do any damage to their neighbors. And therefore, there was no problem at all to raise any kind of animal in the land of Israel. It was only after, during the period of the second Beis HaMikdash, where unfortunately the spiritual level of people descended, what we call Yerida Sadarius, the generations went down in their level, and therefore then the animals began to be naughty and damage other people's property, until there was this necessity to make a decree that you're not allowed to raise these kind of animals in the land of Israel. And therefore, that chosle you mentioned before allowed for himself an allowance that he could have this goat in his house because he was a chosid. He was such a tzaddik. There was no worry that his animal would go and damage a neighbor. However, he was punished because once the chachamim made such a decree, he wasn't allowed to go against it. Now, and this was the problem of the tribes of Gad and Reuven, that they claimed that they weren't great enough, tzaddikim, and they themselves weren't, and therefore, for them, it was going to be forbidden to grow animals in the land of Israel, because they might come to get damage their neighbors. This lack of emuna in their own greatness, in the level of their own tzidkut, that was the problem. And therefore, the only way to remedy the situation would be that someone would come and help them to advance in their spirituality, or at least advance in their understanding of their own greatness. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu forced the tribe of Menashe to come and join them, as in fact the Netziv explains in his explanation, HaMikdavah, that Moshe Rabbeinu asked the sons of Menashe to join Reuven and Gad in their inheritance, and the purpose was that since Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven were sort of farmers, and he was worried that they wouldn't be people who study Torah. They'd be busy with their occupation, and they wouldn't properly study, and there wouldn't be someone that would have a positive influence on Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, that they would be busy. Yeah, they'd be so busy with their cattle, they wouldn't have time to learn Torah. So too we see in Parshas Maaseh regarding the cities of refuge which were set aside for people who murdered inadvertently. Right? We know that the law of someone who murders inadvertently was that he has to run away to these special cities that were called Orei Miklat, cities of protection, and to remain there until the death of the Kohen Gadol, the high priest. And that's what it says in the Parsha. Behor imashet yitenu, the cities they gave were six cities they had to have. And then it says in the very, very next verse, the Torah actually details the way it was divided, right? Three cities were on the east bank of the Jordan and three on the west bank, right? And from those six cities, right, three of them had to be in the portion of the two and a half tribes of Reuven, Gad, and part of Menashe, and the rest were in Eretz Yisrael. And the question, of course, one second, there were nine and a half tribes in Israel. There were only two and a half tribes on the east bank. Why did they get the same number of cities of refuge? Doesn't make sense. Surely Eretz Yisrael needed much, much more. There were nine and a half tribes. And the Gemara in Makkos answers that by saying no, that on the east bank of the Jordan, which was called Gilad, there were many, many people who killed intentionally. And that seems a completely random answer to the question, because we know that the cities of refuge are designated and specially set aside for those who kill inadvertently. So why do you have to tell us that there were many, many wanton murderers? So the Maral in Gur Aryeh explains that because in Gilad there were many, many wanton murderers, so that also caused an upshot, that also caused an increase in the number of people who would kill inadvertently. Why? Because when there are many people that are killing intentionally, so then there are going to be many, many people who are also going to kill unintentionally. Why? Because when there are many, many murderers around, that testifies about the fact that the whole inyan of murder is already not such a frightening thing. You know, read the news, morning news, and hear about terrible, ghastly murders, and you can carry on drinking your coffee and eating your croissant. It's not something that shakes us. It's not something that even frightens us. Why? Because we've already sort of become insensitive to it. And therefore, a person is then less careful about what he does. And yes, we're not going to go and murder people, but it would cause much more easily for inadvertent things to say. As the morale says, right? There are many people who are killing on purpose, and therefore you won't find even one of them, even the best people, that was as careful as he should have been about human life. And therefore, yes, the Jews in the area would not go and kill intentionally, but the chance of being not as careful as you needed to be, and therefore causing, God forbid, an unintentional murder, was much more prevalent. So we see what here was. What was the lack of Sheva God and Reuven that they chose not to live in Eretz Yisrael? They did not believe in their own kedusha, in their own tremendously high level. And when a person doesn't believe in his own value, in his own greatness, so he's going to go lower and lower and lower. And in spite of the fact that this was a small lack, that they didn't believe in the holiness of their animals, that the animals would not go and damage other people, however, because they themselves didn't understand their own greatness, so they would descend in level, and therefore the animals would descend in level, and that could be a disaster. Because if a person has a desire, has a cheshek, a real want to rise higher and higher, and to eventually try to become like a malach of Hashem, so then if he doesn't have that, you know, there's no such thing as going up or down escalator. If you're on the down escalator, you're going to inevitably go down, and therefore that was the problem. Person, most important thing for a person is he has to recognize his own level of greatness, and then that will have a tremendous positive influence on him, on his environment, on everything that he comes in contact with. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. We'll be back in a moment with our Hilchos Shabbos slots.
There are 39 milahot which constitute forms of work forbidden on the Sabbath. It's the why behind the way we do the things we do. Join Rabbi Moshe Schnurb now for Hilchos Shabbos, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is Soul to Soul, back on your radio. Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Matos, Masei Tov, Shin Pei Hei. Tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh. Tonight is Rosh Chodesh. Menachem Av, beginning of the 9-day period of mourning leading up to Tisha B'Av, next Moitzei Shabbos and Sunday. As we always do at this point, just to give you the very, very important times you need to know for this coming Shabbos. So this afternoon, the earliest time for benching lich, for lighting the Shabbos candles, will be at 4:31. 4:31 is already the time where the atmosphere, where the world starts to fill with the Kedusha Shabbos. And if you're ready, and if you want to chaperein and get a little bit extra kedusha, you can grab it 4:31 already. You can make your bracha, you can light your candles, you can accept upon yourself the holy Shabbos, and just sort of settle down, sit down with the kids, with the family, with a book, with something a little bit more ruchni, a little bit more spiritual, and just welcome in the Shabbos Malkus. Boy, challah, come in, bride. Allow ourselves to hug and embrace the bride of Shabbos, the beautiful cover, the beautiful honor, the beautiful ambiance of a Shabbos Kodesh, enhanced this week by coming together, confluence of Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh coming together makes it a truly, truly remarkable Shabbos.
you can't manage to light at 4:31, then any time after that is also great. You have about 50 minutes. The latest time for benching lit this afternoon is at 5:20 is the latest time for lighting your Shabbos candles. And you got to make sure, you got to be on the ball and make sure that by that time, by 5:20, everything is ready for Kedusha Shabbos. The food is on the hot plate, and your bath, and you're dressed, and all the muktzahs put away, and the house looks like you're expecting a very, very important guest. The Shabbos queen is coming, and really to make things all spiffy and beautiful for the Shabbos queen. But just make sure that by 5:20, everything is done. Shkia is 5:38. Which, of course, there is that 18-minute period between 5:20 and 5:38, which is, as I always call it, injury time in situations of absolute emergency where a person really needs that moment to avoid, chas v'shalom, actually breaking Shabbos, because after 5:38, it absolutely is already Shabbos. But we have to regard 5:20 as our latest time for doing anything, for being ready for Shabbos. As we said, this Shabbos is not only Shabbos, it's also Rosh Chodesh. Therefore, we will already in the Ma'ariv tonight insert Yad Levi Yavo in the Amidah, in the Shemoneh Esrei. And of course, if you want to make sure that you can already say Kriyat Shema and not have to repeat again, so 5:56 is already proper night. Once you daven Ma'ariv after that time, which virtually all the shuls in town will do, you're then davening already in the correct time. You're already davening after night. When you say the Kriyat Shema as part of Ma'ariv, you're already fulfilling the mitzvah of saying Kriyat Shema in its correct time. And we can carry on into this beautiful, beautiful Shabbos of the double Kedusha of Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh. Speaking of double, tomorrow, of course, we have the double Pasha of Matas Masay. Some call it the mother of all lanings. It's in terms of Psukim. It is the longest laning of the entire year, 244 Psukim. And of course, this year, because it's also Rosh Chodesh, we get an extra bonus of a 7 Pasuk Maftir that we read. So, of course, it's Shabbos Chazak. We're finishing the book of Bamidbar, and Rez Hashem, next week already, we start the book of Dvarim on the Shabbos, just before, immediately preceding Tishbav. We begin the reading of Sefer Dvarim. So because it is Rosh Chodesh, so obviously we're going to say Hallel as part of Shacharit. It's a bit of a mooted Hallel because, as we know, this is Rosh Chodesh Menachem Av, and tomorrow is then the beginning of the 9-day mourning period. But we still can sing. We can still can make it a very happy and joyous occasion as Rosh Chodesh always is. And as I say, there is the special maftir of Rosh Chodesh. But then, of course, we do something a little bit interesting. Normally, when it's Shabbat Rosh Chodesh, there's a special Haftorah that we read designated for Shabbat Rosh Chodesh, the last chapter of the book of Yeshaya. However, we are, as we know, in the middle of the period of the 3 weeks with the 3 special Haftorahs, the Shlesha, the Peronusa, the 3 Haftorahs where much destruction and bad tidings is predicted for the Jewish nation. And this Shabbos is the 2nd of those 3. And therefore, in spite of the fact that it is Shabbat Rosh Chodesh, the Haftorah for this Shabbat will be from Yirmiyahu, Perek Bet, carrying on into Perek Gimel, and not the normal Haftorah for Shabbat Rosh Chodesh. Because it is the Rosh Chodesh, we will not say Avrachamim, mention Haskarat Neshamot. Of course, because there's Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, the Musaf is a special Musaf. It's the special paragraphs that are relevant for Rosh Chodesh, the ones usually in most of them that are underneath the line dividing the page in half. and that will daven, and of course whatever normal special programs your shul might have on it. Shabbat Rosh Chodesh will probably take place tomorrow. Enjoy them, get involved in them, and learn something. Learn some serious Torah. Be enriched in spirit, not only in your physical enjoyment of the bracha, but allow yourself to sort of open your mind and absorb the Torah that's being taught. Of course, Shabbat carries on. This week we'll be reading the second perek of Pirkei Avot, perek bet of Pirkei Avot, and Shabbos Kodesh ends tomorrow night at 6:12. 6:12 is the end of Shabbat, and of course we then enter in full force the 9 days of mourning. Remember, no meat and no wine. Different customs as to what to do about Havdalah tomorrow night. Some places, if there's a child, they get the child to drink the wine. Otherwise, they might use beer or something else. Although many people do use actually wine or grape juice, whatever is their norm. And instead of maybe sharing it with everybody else, they drink it by themselves and don't share it out. And then, of course, you know, we go into the whole week of the 9 days. As I say, no meat, no wine, certainly no music, and no proper bathing, just a quick bath to sort of freshen oneself up. Only very, very necessary laundry is done. And of course, we go through the week, and of course, next week will be Shabbat Chazon, and lead from there straight into the fast of Tisha B'Av. We are learning the halachot of lighting and extinguishing fires, mavir and mechabeh, right? The malacha of lighting and kindling and extinguishing of fires. Now, we know that extinguishing a fire, so in order to sort of produce a charcoal, so is one of the 39 malachot prohibited on Shabbos. In the Mishkan, they would turn wood into charcoal by setting fire to wood and then extinguishing it. They would then use this charcoal to build a steady and long-lasting fire for preparing the dyes used to color the curtains in the Mishkan. Similarly, if one extinguishes the flame of a candle so that its wick will light more easily later on, so then the transgression is of a Torah prohibition that one is actually violating. What about one who extinguishes a fire not because he wants the charcoal, but because he wants to conserve fuel, or because the light produced by the flame is bothering him? In other words, he's not essentially interested in putting out the fire. He simply does not want the candle to keep burning. So the Tanaim in the Gemara disagree about this. According to Rav Shimon, since this is a malacha, what we call malacha she'eina tzricha legufa, a malacha that is not actually needed for its own sake, it is only prohibited rabbinically. However, according to Rabbi Yehuda, even if one's objective is not the performance of the malacha itself, since he does in fact intend to extinguish the flame, he has performed a malacha and violated a Torah law. And this is the whole discussion in Gemara Shabbat on 31b. How do we practically deal with it? So we're going to take a short break and come back and discuss it in a moment. This is 101.9 High FM. The program is Soul to Soul, and this is the greatest Jewish radio station in all of Africa. 101.9 High FM. This is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Matos and Maaseh, Rosh Chodesh, Menachem Av, as you prepare for another amazing, amazing Shabbos, the Shabbos that's going to herald in the beginning of the 9-day mourning period, and Bezer Hashem, Tisha B'Av, or Bezer Hashem, one may still not be Tisha B'Av, maybe it will be a Yom Tov, but we prepare. Anyway, we were talking before the break about the concept of a Melacha She'enai Tzrichai Legufa. A melacha we did, a performance of an act that is a melacha, but we know that on Shabbat, in order to violate the melachot of Shabbos, one has to actually do the activity that is forbidden with the same intention that those who actually created the melacha, those who built the Mishkan, operated the Mishkan, why did they do this activity? And in order to violate the Torah prohibition of doing that action, we have to have the same motivation as they did. Like we're talking about putting out a fire. The reason they put out a fire in the Beis Mikdash was because they wanted to use the charcoal for other purposes necessary in the Mishkan. So therefore, if you put out a fire for the purpose of the charcoal, you're then doing what's called the Malechet Machshevet. You're doing the same activity that was done in the Mishkan for the same intention, and you'd be violating Melacha. What about if I'm putting out the fire for a different reason? The light is bothering me. I want to conserve fuel, not because I need the ashes. So is that considered a melacha or not? So we said there's an argument in the Gemara between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says, no, if you do a melacha and your intention is not the same as the Torah's, it's downgraded. It's only a rabbinic prohibition. However, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, at the end of the day, you did that activity, you performed the activity which the Torah forbids, and therefore you are violating on a Torah level, the Melacha. Practically speaking, Rambam maintains that a Melacha she'ena tzericha legufa is prohibited by Torah law. The Rambam says you are violating a Torah law, right? And that's in his Mishnah Torah in Hilchot Shabbat in Perek Aleph Halacha Zayin. While according to Mois Rishonim, it's only rabbinically prohibited. And that's Rav Haigon and Rabbeinu Chanan all hold that way. And Hamor and Ramban and others. And in fact, the Shulchan Aruch also in Shin Lamedalid and the Mishnah Berurah all hold that way. Since the only difference between a melacha she'ena tzrich legufa and a regular melacha is the intention behind it, performing a melacha she'ena tzrich legufa is considered more severe than violating a standard rabbinic prohibition, and therefore one must be very careful not to do it at all. Okay, that leaves us just enough time to thank you all for being part of our amazing, amazing show. I hope we learned something. I hope we are possessed and inspired to make this the most wonderful Shabbos of our lives. And please God, I want to wish you all a fantastic Shabbos and a good Chodesh. And please God, may we not have to fast next week. May our tshuva, may our repentance change the way God thinks and cause Him to please God speedily bring us the Mashiach b'mehera b'yameinu. Have a wonderful Shabbos and Chodesh.